But it was just very funny to see you like looking around now, like asking where's my note and just seeing staying to the void.
The bewilderment of an old person. Where did I park my car?
That's a great way to start episode 144.
Whoa.
Of South Africa's most accessible consumer technology podcast, Overclock ZA. Thank you for joining us. I see you guys are enjoying the Akram interview. We will endeavor to bring you more of those kinds of interviews because they actually do better than the regular shows. And I don't know what that says about us, Gavin. I'm joined as always by Gavin Dudley, editor of Tech Magazine, the largest consumer technology publication on the continent.
I think we're good, Lindsay, because we have energy. These other people, they're just talking about their products. Maybe you want to hear about their products, but we've got energy. But next week, you know, we're talking to next week. We're talking to the Microsoft people about the launch of Windows 11. So the day after the launch, I've set up for us to chat to them, and they're going to talk us through Windows 11, which I think will be very popular because everyone wants to know whether Windows 11 is worth their while.
Yes. So one thing, though, that I had to tell the Microsoft people was that, unfortunately, I could not publish my Surface Pro 7 review. Oh. Because the audio was just, I don't know what happened to my mic. It's like my mic decided it was going to embed itself like inside my body, just clip all the way.
What do you mean the audio of the recording you made of your for the review?
It was just horrible. Even by my standards, I couldn't publish it.
Your standards are pretty high, by the way. Okay.
They're quite low. You can find all that, that opinion guy on YouTube. That opinionguy.co.za is also where I publish a few things when I'm not very busy making actual money. I am Lindsay Shooters, Sharpshooters on social media, reluctant tech journalist, and I am just going to let Gavin talk about the EU and USB-C.
Okay. So, I mean, the history of this problem, well, no. Let me start at the beginning. We've all been annoyed over the last 30 years by incompatible chargers in phones. But over 30 years, they've slowly changed that dynamic to now where we have a kind of relative standard for phone charging in the marketplace. We had micro USB for the last 10 years at least. Oh, sorry, for the last 20 years, we've had something like micro USB, and we've had USB-C, which is a far superior technology. For probably the last 3 or 4 years, it's been the standard for all phones. You know, high-end phones, low-end phones, everyone uses USB-C for many reasons, but not Apple. So Apple has its own standard, always has had its own standards. And the problem with that is that Apple makes up 50% of the market in most countries. Say Germany, France, the UK, you know, anywhere you choose, Apple is 50% of the market. So all the Android phones have slowly moved to USB-C, but Apple obviously has not. And I think the EU has gotten... Well, the EU gave technology companies, I think it was about 7 years, to come up with their own standard, for a single standard for all phones, because it assessed that we were putting 11,000 tons of e-waste just out of incompatible chargers every year, 11,000 tons. So if you want to imagine 11,000 tons, I think a city Golf probably weighs something close to a ton. Okay, so imagine 11,000 of those stacked up, just an enormous mountain of city Golfs. That's the number of chargers and cables that are being thrown back into landfills every year in Europe. Okay, and they think they can spare Europe 11,000 tons of e-waste if we can get a unified standard for all phones for charging a single kind of plug. And they want USB-C as the standard. They think it will be the most stable standard that can be upgraded in speed and functionality over time. Understandably, Apple has got its nose made very out of joint about this. And I understand why. I do think that Apple has kind of innovated around its own jack system. You know, it's not just about power. That jack is used for data input and output on Android and Apple. But I think Apple has innovated on its connectivity system over time. So their original connector was quite wide, and I can't remember what it was called. I think it was just called the iPod kind of connector.
The 30-pin connector,
It was quite wide. And then they moved to
Lightning.
And they've had Lightning ever since, right?
Yeah, on the iPhone, yeah.
Right. So the Lightning port yeah, it's probably the last 6 or 7 years has all been lightning. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the EU is going to do about this. They're busy pushing the legislation through right now. I don't know where it's going to end. I personally can see benefits to having a single unified standard. I think people will innovate a lot more and a lot faster with a single standard. In the same way that we do with power supply and also and internet cabling. I mean network cabling. You know, we have a standard for that. It's called Cat 5 or Cat 6. It's a standard plug.
RJ45,
I think.
Trying to feed the tiny, the really nondescript text on the cable right now. But here's my read. I'm all for standards. It's kind of just the iPhone and the last remaining, like the iPad 9th generation, the entry-level iPad that is now on Lightning cables, which is interesting. But the important thing for me is that first they're pushing through this USB-C thing, so that's just the shape of the plug, and then they're going to push on like standardizing the actual USB power delivery. So they want, I think, USB power delivery 3.0 or something like that.
Right.
So just standardize the speeds coming out of these charging bricks. I would prefer them to push it up a little bit higher, maybe get like 50, 60 watt charging bricks in there so that you can charge your laptop with the same charger that you charge your phone with, and then have like those two USB out chargers like Microsoft does, thankfully.
I think that is exactly where they're trying to go with this. They already can see that laptops are being charged on USB-C. I think that's probably the biggest lever to have USB-C as the standard. But what Lindsay's identified before is that not all USB-C is created equal. So even if we're using USB-C for the power, we also need to use it for other functions. And there, different manufacturers have implemented USB-C differently.
Yeah.
In particular, Samsung is Lindsay's main bugbear. Because why, Lindsay?
Just because of the audio. So they run a proprietary audio. Wait, what's it? They don't have the decoding, so the DAC inside. They need it on the dongle itself. So you can't just plug an ordinary USB to like aux out dongle in. You need like the specific thing with the audio interface built into it. So like I literally have to take this mic that I'm talking into right now and put it up a high-end Samsung's bum so that I can get audio, cabled audio out of it.
Okay. So I mean the point here is that USB-C all looks the same, but it doesn't all work the same because inside the actual connector, they've wired things up a little differently. Mm. So that they have to get sorted out as well so that everything will work in a consistent way. Okay, but that's a way off still. We're going to see probably a lot of fighting in the market. But just so you understand that if the EU does get this through and forces it to become the standard in Europe, it will probably become the standard for the world because I can't see Apple producing two different kinds of iPhone, one for Europe and one for America. I can't see that. So
But they get, I think it's like 18 months to implement it. So unlike, because you know, it's Apple adjacent story. So like the tech blogs go crazy with their clickbaity headlines. They're like, the iPhone 13 can't go to Europe. And it's like, dude, no. That's not how laws work, man.
There's a compliance period
and everything. Yeah. Talking about Apple, 9th gen iPad has been released in South Africa coming next week for the chief price of 6,000 Rand, which is exactly the same price as the 8th gen launched with double the storage and better internals. Still the best computer.
So this is the 10.2-inch screen, right? This is the standard iPad. Okay. Yes. Why do we have pricing for this one and not for the others, like the Mini and so on?
The Mini came in at 9,000 Rand for the 64-gig Wi-Fi one, which is 1,000. Yeah.
Okay, you can understand the confusion here. So now we have a smaller iPad with a much higher price. Is that right? Have I understood you correctly? I heard you say 9,000 Rand for the Mini.
Yes, because the Mini is a shrunken down Air.
Yeah,
so it's much more powerful than the entry-level iPad.
I wonder if that will discourage people because you know on the face of it you appear to be getting less. It's only in the tech spec that you're getting more, and a lot of people don't even understand the tech spec they're getting. You know,
but
so we know that Mini will kill everything in sight, but on face value it doesn't look like it. You know,
but iPad Mini, like I'm an iPad Mini user. I'm leading this off iPad Mini 5 right now. It's my second most used computer. And like iPad Mini users are specific, like there's specific reasons why you pick it up and you understand.
Once you have one. Yeah. All right. So it does mean that the entry to iPad world is 6,000 Rand, and that's for a rocking model. I mean, it doesn't have what the iPad Mini has, but it's still going to do 90% of everything you can expect any tablet to do.
Yeah. It's an iPad. It's a perfect iPad. Other things that came in this week, Huawei had a launch for what I thought was just going to be a boring Nova 8i, which is like a light version of the Nova 8. That we maybe didn't like so much. But then they just sneakily said, oh, here's the Nova 9, as they call it overseas. But around here, we're going to be calling the recently launched Nova 9 the Nova 8 Pro. And that gets the main image sensor from the Huawei Mate 30 Pro, which was released a couple of years back. So it's like got flagship kind of imaging specs. But that was also the very camera sensor that made me fall out of love with Huawei because they moved away from the monochrome setup, like the dual setup, and then they use that RYYB and the color reproduction just like went out the window. They've corrected it now with using a red, green, green, blue because, the two yellow pixels.
I think it was too yellow. Yeah, it was too yellow before. Yeah.
The two yellows, they weren't good for color accuracy. So that's also coming. Pricing is still a bit unsure. Akram couldn't confirm that. But then they also dropped the Huawei Watch 3 and 3 Pro. And
That's a thing of beauty, I must say. I'm very into Huawei watches.
It's a thing of beauty. And that Pro comes with a titanium casing, selling for 8,000 Rand. But
that's Apple Watch prices.
Their idea is that you have like these guys with these really expensive watch collections, but then they need something like for the gym. And then this is the watch that they can wear to the gym. And I don't know. This is kind of like you
strange
and
strange rationale, man. Strange rationale.
You have that rationale about the Apple Watch where you're like, oh, people wearing this to the gym because it's so expensive.
Okay, I did post remarks about this. I never said Apple Watch is not appropriate for the gym. It's not appropriate for sports because it's just too sensitive as a piece of equipment, you know. And it's not good enough to track soccer players and things like that. It's just not good at that kind of thing. It's perfect for gym people who basically want to be seen. That's what gym people, well, the majority of gym people, it's like a place in which you are seen by other people. You know, it's not like you're going for a run and no one's going to see you because you're running in the mountains like me. You know, actually, you are seen. So what you're wearing actually matters, both your clothes, your hair, and your watch.
Out of the current wearables, the Apple Watch leads the pack by far on heart rate accuracy across like different kind of domains, which is just bizarre. I'll link it in the podcast description.
I don't know. Did DC Rainmaker say that? I seriously doubt DC Rainmaker.
There's a German guy, and he's like a research scientist who like tests this shit. Mm-hmm. And he puts everything through its paces. He had similar findings to what I did with the Huawei Band 6. That was surprisingly accurate. And like he measures it proper scientifically, like he would do in the lab, like for his job. And that's his vibe.
He's one voice in the wilderness who believes that Apple Watches are great sport watches. Is that right?
Yeah, the heart rate monitors are like insanely accurate.
Okay, one person's opinion. I'm afraid the entire rest of the industry doesn't agree with him. Okay, but we mustn't get stuck on this.
Please let us not
remember
get stuck.
What our counselor said, what our therapist said, is don't get stuck on this stuff, Lindsay. Okay, push past it. Come on, you're a bigger man. Okay.
So, NASPERS is considering COVID-19 vaccines, mandatory COVID-19 vaccines. I think everybody is kind of waiting for the CCMA verdict on the Discovery thing, because Discovery pushed ahead with this idea and then like they got taken to the CCMA.
Yeah, so Discovery is saying that, as Discovery is by far the biggest medical aid in the country, but they've also obviously been involved in the vaccine rollout. They will require vaccinations from January next year. So you've still got a couple of months for the stuff to play out. You know, I wonder if people who are unvaccinated today will somehow get vaccinated between now and January. I doubt it, hey? Anyway, so Discovery took the step, and they are testing the system to see what the CCMA will determine. I mean, in America, Amazon, other really big employers have already pushed this through. Because in America, I think the employer has a lot more rights and can make up any laws they like, and they're supported by the legal system. Here, I think because of how employers abused people, you know, in the apartheid era, there's a lot more protection for workers, and this is now what's come into play here.
Other things, legacy kind of things that are biting us in the ass. Remember in April when there was like that third-party vendor that was doing debt collections for Africa Bank, and they like had a serious ransomware attack? So Telkom just discovered that they also used this vendor, DebtIn, and yeah, they just had some customer data that was also exposed, but they say that it wasn't part of the same ransomware attack. And yeah, it just brings up the question about like, yeah, cool, you are awesome as like the first party supplier, but your suppliers, are they still operating to the same level of like data protection and privacy protection that you are?
Exactly. This is actually sort of a facet of South African, of African IT security problems, where if there are African countries that, or African companies that are supporting multinational companies with product or, you know, components or whatever, then the African countries become the target of these ransomware attackers as a way to penetrate global firms. So they pick the supplier, that part of the supply chain that appears to have the weakest security in their attack at that point. That's been the problem for Africa. Why? Because we don't even do the basic hygiene of keeping stuff patched, keeping stuff up to date with, you know, current versions. We don't have, you know, company password policies, all this kind of stuff. We just don't have in place. So it makes South Africa a target for, you know, people to attack. I mean, that's not the same as what happened here with Africa Bank.
Yeah.
But the scale down analogy is that if DebtIn gets hacked, then it's not just Africa Bank information. It's all their clients who are now exposed, including, as you say, Telkom. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just become like another day, another data breach, really, you know.
It's happening all over the place. It's mad, dude. I don't understand.
There's like impunity, man. Like we just seem defenseless. People just attack and penetrate at will. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, they're talking about like privacy. There was this thing going on Twitter today where this lady was talking about her iPhone that got snatched, and these people just like emptied out the bank account.
Keep going.
So what they do is they like will social engineer it where, because everyone's wearing masks and like modern iPhones have like Face ID, they'll like watch you type in your key, your password. Once they have that, then they change like your iCloud, they change your two-factor authentication stuff, they change your the one-time PIN for your bank account, or they just take the SIM card. And this is why it's important that you have a SIM card PIN, a phone PIN, like enable all the stuff, two-factor authentication, like on everything, because they just take the SIM card out, they put it in a different phone, because all your OTA stuff go to one-time PINs, go to the SIM card.
Card number, right, yeah.
And then they just use cell phone banking, not like going into the app. But 90% of the time, if they have your passcode, they have your app code, and then they just change everything.
Sorry, I was skeptical. I didn't realize they actually had the passcode. So I think what you're alluding to here, and I've heard similar stories, is that because most Apple products and iPhones in particular do the Face ID thing, and the Face ID thing doesn't work with the mask on.
Yeah.
Most Apple people are obliged to put in their PIN code at some point in transactions or for whatever they're doing to unlock the phone. Yeah. And that can be sort of sneaked over your shoulder. Is that so that's what happened. It's not like they snatched the iPhone, ran away, and figured out how to get into a bank account.
Yeah.
They actually had a PIN.
But there's all sorts of like other things where sometimes like the biometric security on your phone is not the best, or like what, because they just go through your SIM card and do in like cell phone banking through your SIM card.
Because,
so just have all those things in place, please. I know Standard Bank doesn't allow you to actually punch in your PIN to access the app. You have to use Face ID if you're on an iPhone, which is it's a source of much frustration for my wife.
Sure. Yeah. But
it is the superior one. And yeah, as just be careful out there, guys. Like,
yeah,
if they snatch your stuff, just like go wipe everything, inform your bank, inform your network provider, inform like your freaking home loan people. And just get that stuff sorted out.
What people do is they do the find my phone thing first, and that takes up like a full hour of you discovering that your phone is actually in Google Letu somewhere.
Yeah, and it's not even on. They've switched it off.
Yeah. It takes you an hour to fiddle around with that stuff. What you should be using that hour for is stopping your stuff. Yeah. Okay. Changing your passwords. All right. What else you got for us, man?
Dude, you and I just see Andre the Rater's name every time I go.
Yeah, it's actually, there's a weird Andre de Rater thing going on at the moment. It's almost like a meme. For those who don't know Andre de Rater, he's the CEO of Eskom. He's one of my heroes at the moment. I don't have heroes. I don't put people up on pedestals. Elon Musk is on a low pedestal. Andre de Rater is on a slightly higher pedestal, but they're not very high pedestals. I don't put people on pedestals. But Andre de Rater has taken on the hardest bloody job, and I think he's doing an excellent job, and that's why I'm naming him as one of my tech people for the year, because he's basically making our tech go on working by supplying electricity. But that's not the point. My point of my meme story is someone did an interview with him and published it on The Conversation. The Conversation is a website that produces serious journalism that is free for anybody to reuse. This interview with Andre de Rater, I think it's only 7 or 8 questions, something like that. But he answered so fully and in such length, presumably there were written responses, that story has been picked up by 5 or 6 other outlets who have published it as their own story, even though it's not their own story. It's a story from The Conversation. But it was so great to get all these answers from de Rater, where he explains his plan, how things are going to work, how things are working. And I think everybody just wants to see that, to see that there is a plan and that things are moving ahead and there is hope. And maybe that's why the story got republished and republished. I saw it everywhere.
Interesting thing happening with energy at the moment. I missed the Nedbank energy seminar today. I had another engagement. I caught the MasterCard Future of Payments webinar, though.
Oh, right.
Which was like an hour of my life of them talking around the fact that they don't support, MasterCard doesn't support Apple Pay in this country.
But talking around, you mean they acknowledged it and didn't provide solutions?
About tap to pay on like NFC devices and just like refusing to mention. They mentioned like Apple Pay as a trend, but not like as the actual thing that they're going to support. They had Luno, I forget his name, CEO of Luno, on as well. And I was shocked to find out that Luno has 8 million users across 40 countries.
That is amazing. That is amazing. For those who don't know what Luno is, it's a very easy to use cryptocurrency wallet. So, I mean, I was a complete innocent, a complete noob when I went into Luno as per my friend's suggestions. And within 10 minutes, I'd bought my first cryptocurrency. It was really that simple. So if you're wondering how to get into the stuff, the only way to really learn is to get your feet wet. So Luno is a great jumping off point. Go to Luno, start there, see how it goes. Mine was a seamless, painless experience. 10 minutes, and I had my Bitcoin and I had my Ethereum. Yeah.
Yeah. The big stories out of there, though, is there's a big push now to convert like all informal traders over to like the soft POS system so that they can at least accept tap to pay, that sort of thing. Tap to pay is kind of like MasterCard for a second. We're going into like QR codes. I know like 2018 kind of around there, they were hard into QR codes, and now they've just gone the other way and they're like, no, we're going to do just tap to pay, contactless payments all around. Yeah, because QR codes is a big security issue there. But the big story I was going to talk about, there's kind of a showdown going down now between Pravin Gordhan and Gwede Mantashe. Because this headline was like it for me. The world's richest countries consider spending billions to move South Africa away from coal. Because there's big problems because we are the 12th biggest emitter of CO2 in the world right now. And like
really energy, the 12th biggest, jeez, apparently much higher than I thought. Okay. Yeah.
But you know my feelings about like all these big countries that got rich.
Yeah.
But the problem is that Gwede, obviously, Gwede, if you're listening, yo.
That's DJ Gwede to you.
He is from the Communist Party. He's the chair of the African National Congress. And he comes from the mining unions as well. So obviously it's in his best interest. I thought that he was going to be the best guy to transition us away from like the over-reliance on the coal mines. But he's just like doubling down on that and proposing that we build more coal mines. But yeah, it's an interesting space to be in. There's obviously the 1,000 megawatt limit that Cyril pushed through for the independent power producers. So there's a lot of projects that are going to come online like that. There's the power ships that are still...
power trips.
We're talking about nuclear now, which for me is like really the way out of the doldrums that we have been in. And outside of that, Gavin, what do the numbers 802.11 mean to you?
I was hoping you were going to answer the question. Okay, so you've probably all seen 802.11 somewhere. Those are just an engineering nomenclature for Wi-Fi. And, well, it's not just Wi-Fi, it's all wireless communication. So I don't know exactly what they mean. I should know, and I don't. But everyone just knows 802.11a, .11b, .11g, n, a, c, all these letters that come after. But there is also 802.11.16. There's an 802.11.21, I think. There are all these other standards. They're just not widely used. 802.11 is the standard for Wi-Fi, and the letters that come after it mean faster and faster. They're changing it, of course. They're now referring to it as Wi-Fi 5 and Wi-Fi 6. So Wi-Fi 5 would be 802.11N, I think. Is that right?
AC, yeah.
Is what, 5 or 6?
I think that's 5. And then AD is, yeah, then AD starts becoming 6. And then, like, we're beyond 6 already now. I think there's, like, a 6G or, like, a 6E. Sorry, 6E is incoming.
Right.
That is, like, super fast kind of wireless.
So what we're looking at here is that they had all these engineering terms, and they were just not very user-friendly. And their consumers would see 802.11ac and not understand what on earth that might mean compared to 802.11n or 802.11g.
Yeah.
So they decided to call this one Wi-Fi 6, that one Wi-Fi 5, that one Wi-Fi 7, in order to simplify things.
And 6E.
Yeah, they're going completely undermine the system by creating a Wi-Fi 6E. Now we don't know if Wi-Fi 6E is faster or slower than Wi-Fi 6. You know,
it's like, faster. And it
I know, but why would they do that? You know,
like better, like MIMO sort of stuff. So like the multiple input, multiple output, like antenna thing where it will aggregate a couple of antennas like on one signal. But interestingly enough, when I had the Samsung Galaxy Tab S7 on test, that was the first Wi-Fi 6.
Yeah.
I figured out that my Rain 5G router is actually a Wi-Fi 6.
Yeah, so, excellent.
Because
excellent
of that device. Which was quite interesting. I believe that everybody should upgrade like their phones and portable computers every 3 years.
Yes.
Their routers every 3 years.
Maximum,
Then take advantage of the newer standards, because your quality of life just improves.
Yeah, you don't necessarily want to be an early adopter, because often they're ironing out bugs in these things, and that requires your devices to get little software upgrades all the time in order to cope with all the bugs in the early versions. But you know, after 3 years, the standards have usually matured, and then it's safe to use. Can I just check something with you? I don't want to sound like an idiot here, but is RAIN using conventional 5G, or are they using some hybrid thing of 5G and something else of their own? Is RAIN 5G?
It's 5G NR, so it's new radio, which is some 5G adjacent equipment that is put onto LTE equipment.
Yeah, and that's what boost. I thought.
But on the uplink, it's all LTE.
The uplink is LTE. Okay.
Yeah, the downlink is 5G.
Right, okay. Okay, so we don't need to get any more into this. I just thought we'd help people clarify. So what used to be called 802.11 with a letter after it still exists. It's just they're trying to use a more user-friendly term, Wi-Fi 5, Wi-Fi 6.
I have one important question now, and I've actually read the note correctly and see that you didn't delete the laptop stuff. Because I was like, how do you get a 5,000 Rand router as your minimum spec?
Oh, very good. So what Lindsay's saying is that we were discussing how to buy a laptop. I wanted to discuss how to buy a router, but we're not going to do that this week. It's too complicated. But the 5,000 Rand was what I had put in for the minimum laptop. And Lindsay's seeing it as a minimum router. For 5,000 Rand, you can get one of those routers with 10 antenna that come out the side.
Yeah, it looks like it's about to like colonize your planet or something.
Yeah.
Just shortly, like on routers, I'm a big TP-Link fan right now, just because their backend stuff works quite nicely and it's well fully featured. I know you have a soft spot for D-Link, Kevin, but D-Link, I don't find their user interface, when you start digging around like in the settings and stuff, to be as feature complete as a lot of other people. ASUS is also another one. Like when I'm balling, like when I make a lot of money, I'm just going to have like a full ASUS like setup. Range extenders, I've come around to, because I rely on one now, but I've turned a TP-Link router that can operate in four modes. So it can be an access point, a internet router, a wireless extender, and something else. I forgot what the other thing
is. So it actually has modes you can choose.
Yes.
That's quite important, actually, because there is a difference between having a second router and having a range extender. There are differences in how it handles the traffic. So if you can get a second router to perform as a range extender, that is first prize. Well done. Okay.
I believe you can just hook up any modern router as an access point as well. So like if you have a 5G connection like I do, where you have need like a specific like pipe
kind
coming
of
in a router, and then you run a cable to another one, different part of the house, and you just like plug it into the WLAN port, and then you can have yourself an access point, and you can just sort out everything to run on the same kind of network settings everywhere, and you can walk around your house and just have internet flying at you from all angles.
No, that is not what actually happens. Here's what really happens. What really happens is you're walking around with your phone, and your phone's attached to this router, and now you move over there, and it wants to attach to that router, but it's desperately clinging on to the signal from the old router and not getting the handover to the new router. And it's actually chaos when you set up multiple access points. It's not as simple as you think. You might want to adjust the power of your radio inside your access point, inside your spare router that you're using as an access point, so that the phone knows to connect to this router or to that router, or else it just becomes confused. Okay, but that's all I have to say on the subject. I don't have anything else to add.
Really. My problem with wireless range extenders is, as I've said a couple of times in this podcast, you are tempted to put it on the edge of your network where you have the weaker signal, so it can then pass stronger signal to the rest of the house. That is the wrong way to do it.
Exactly.
You kind of want to do it like halfway away.
Yep.
Because any signal degradation that it gets there is only going to be passed on. So it's like you're just passing on the little trickle, and it's becoming less of a trickle. It's like just a steady like drip feed. There's like, I was actually consulting with somebody on this exact problem earlier today. That's why it's so fresh in my head. That's why I've got so much energy about it. And I just love talking about like home infrastructure stuff. But ASUS AirMesh is a thing of beauty. So if you like collate an ecosystem of AirMesh routers, mesh networking is the future. TP-Link also has like stylish little ones called the Deco Range that look like air purifiers.
I'm expecting some D-Link mesh routers to come soon. Then I'll give my report on that.
Everybody but that's has where you should be going. I'm all about home connectivity, especially in these work from home times, and especially when you have children like my little privileged brats, where they're like, the internet is slow, and it's like, no, dude, the internet is not slow. Uh-huh. You have no idea what I've gone through to make it not slow.
What I'm going through to bring you this internet.
But I think that is where I will leave it. I am, as I said earlier, Lindsay Shooters. That's Sharp Shooters on social media. SharpSeutters. And thatopinionguy.co.za is where you'll find me on the internet. Gavin, what's going on?
James Bond. Excellent.
Oh, gosh.
I went to the media premiere thing yesterday. It really is as good as they're making out. I had a couple of issues. The one-liners were sticking a little bit. You know, I had a couple of issues, but overall, a fabulous movie. The problem is I know way too much James Bond. I've watched every single James Bond movie upwards of a dozen times. I know all the lines. I know everything about all of them. And in that context, it doesn't appear quite as special. But it really is a high-velocity, polished, superb movie. And here's what you want to watch out for. See how many pieces of music and melodies you recognize that come from other Bond movies. For some reason, there's some kind of homage they've created where there are little snippets of music from, I counted, 5 other Bond movies used in this movie. It's really quite extraordinary. In order to know all that, you have to have listened to all the Bond soundtracks, as I have done. Sorry for me. Okay, but do listen out for the music. There are also 4 different Aston Martins. I thought the Aston Martin is my car of choice. Beautiful, beautiful. And Daniel Craig at his best. I think he's going out at the top. Do make a point of seeing this movie. And don't compare it to any other James Bond movie. Each one of these is a unique piece of art, in my opinion.
There are 2 movies that have ruined franchises that I have adored. For me. One of them was Batman Begins.
Okay.
But luckily, the subsequent Batman.
Yes, made up. Yeah.
Made up for that. And the other one was Casino Royale. Completely switched me off of James Bond.
Really?
Because as someone who's actually read the books, as everybody should do at some stage in their lives, I believe. It was just like, I when I watch the movies, I want to see fantasy. I don't want to see James Bond being like a real person.
Okay, you know? Well, that's very interesting. I mean, I wrote a film review. Heaven forbid, I don't write film reviews. I wrote a film review, but that was my main point, is that I think, you know, the Bond character adapts to the times in which you see him on screen. Yeah. And this particular movie is a huge dose of humanity. It's got 2 very big, significant twists that come in at the end. And it's really all about his humanity and him as a person, even though he's larger than life. But I can't give away any more spoilers than that. Other than that, I'm over and out, Mr. Lindsay. Bye-bye.
Cool. Cheers.